call the Labor and Commerce Committee to order. It's February 5th, 1992, 3:37 p.m. Present are Senators Pierce, Kraft, and Collins. We have before us today first hearings in the legislature on Senate Bill 342 and Senate Bill 363. We'll be taking up Senate Bill 342 first. That's disability insurance obtained by charities by Senator Frank. Labor and Commerce is its only referral. It would be my hope that we could move that bill today. When we get to 363 by Senator Ewing, we do not yet have fiscal note on that bill, so we won't be able to move it today, but we will have a first hearing, and Senator Ewing will be coming to give us an overview on it. Senator Frank, would you like to join us, please? And if you want to come around and join us at the end, then you can stay at the table and have people we are not on teleconference.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your hearing the bill. The bill's pretty simple. It merely removes question as to whether or not charity may be the beneficiary in a life insurance policy. A recent ruling in New York State called into question whether or not a charity could be a beneficiary of a life insurance policy unless there was specific state statute so authorizing such. So the bill does just that, authorizes charities to be a beneficiary of a life insurance policy in state statute so that there is no question. Other states, 23 other states have done the same thing, and it makes a lot of sense. It will allow charities to be the beneficiary of life insurance policies. People can take out life insurance policies on themselves and have the charity be the beneficiary, and the premiums paid would also be a charitable contribution as well as the benefit in the event of death. If there's any questions, I would try to answer them.
Thank you very much, Senator Frank. Do you have questions for Senator Frank? Senator Frank, I have a question. You mentioned that the premiums would become, not sure how you stated it.
Tax deductible and, yeah.
How does that work?
Well,
who pays the premium, I guess is my question.
Well, the person that, let's say that you take out a life insurance policy on yourself, you pay the premiums. Mm-hmm. And the premiums, because the beneficiary is the charity is the beneficiary, then the premiums would also be tax deductible, as well as the payment in the event of your death would be.
So if I took out a policy on myself and made that policy payable to
Girl Scouts.
Thank you.
Scouts.
And I could deduct my premium each year as long as the Scouts continue to be.
That's correct.
If I change, let's say I turn 65 and suddenly decide I don't like the Scouts anymore because it's something that made me angry and I changed, do I then go back and have a tax liability for all those years that I deducted the premiums?
I would think you would. It's a good question. I thought about that myself. I think that's the case.
And Senator Frank, I know you had a possible amendment.
We
No,
I don't think it's necessary. We had considered that, and we decided that it wasn't necessary. I'm trying to stay with a simple approach. There's probably more complicated approaches that you could argue one way or the other, but we feel like the simple approach is the best approach.
Okay. We do have, for the record, a zero fiscal note from the Department of Commerce. Charitable organization exempt from taxation under 26 U.S.C. 501c3. What sorts of organizations can be a charity under 501c3? Obviously, the Scouts can. What about museums?
Yes, I think almost all of what you would normally think of as a charitable organization would fall under 501c3. I think if there are some limitations my staff could enlighten us on. It has to do with the purposes. I think there's a little bit, it's a little bit narrower than Hall Charitable.
The reason I'm asking, in dealing with the gaming legislation, which is absolutely this committee's favorite stuff to deal with, the list of charitable organizations that are eligible to own gaming permits in this state is fairly broad and probably goes beyond what the average Alaskan thinks a charity is. It includes, for example, political parties. Can I buy a life insurance policy and make my local district Republican party organization the beneficiary and I don't have to pay premiums? Would they come under the 501c3?
No, I don't know. I'd have to research that.
Because they are a charitable organization.
Yeah,
under the,
I understand.
Under
that's a good question.
Definition.
I don't know.
Mr. Sully, would you like to join us?
Sure. I don't know that my answer, but I'll join you. Madam Chair.
We're not on teleconference.
For the record, I'm Rick Sully, aide to Senator Frank. Your specific question, I guess, as to a political party, I suspect would not be allowed because there is some nuance as to the activities that an entity conducts and whether or not they're tax exempt under the IRS designation. And I think it has to do with lobbying. I don't want to get into trying to make a tax determination. I think that was Senator Frank's decision, was to try and leave a broad approach, and this will undoubtedly lead to opinions by counsel for different insurance companies, possibly another private letter ruling. I think the Division of Insurance might be willing to comment on that.
Okay.
But I do have a list of 501c3 groups. It's pretty extensive, if anybody cares to look at it.
Okay, I'd like us to have it for the record, okay, if we could. How many states have this sort of application, or have made this sort of thing possible by statute?
By statute, I believe
or
that there
permit,
are...
permit, whether it's by statute.
There's 23 that I think allow a charity to obtain the insurance themselves, and another 7 that arguably allow it by assignment, which is not wanting to complicate this, but I think you could probably say 31. And many others are in the process of modifying their laws now because of the New York ruling or private letter ruling.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Sola? Great, thanks. We do have 2 people from the Division of Insurance here to testify. Do the 2 of you want to come up at the same time? Or?
She wants to check it out. My name is Don Koch. I'm chief of the market surveillance section with the Division of Insurance, and with me is Gloria Glover, who's our chief financial examiner. Be happy to answer what questions. We do support the legislation. I can comment on the concern that you have about political parties. They are not a 501c3 corporation or charitable organization. And as I understand 501c3, and I haven't read it, but I've heard enough testimony on the thing now, and also some testimony from a tax attorney in Anchorage who was speaking to it. He said that basically if the organization is involved in lobbying, and that's part of their purpose, then they're not a 501c3. They're I guess, a 501c4 or something like that, so they wouldn't be covered by this.
And is that if they have a paid lobbyist versus volunteers?
I think the idea is if their purpose, one of the purposes of the organization, is to engage in lobbying.
I mean, if they're a political action committee or something like that?
Correct.
If they are the Boy Scouts, and the Boy Scouts lobbies for a new facility, that wouldn't be prohibited.
That's correct. I can't remember the other questions you had.
I asked about the premiums being taxed if you change who your designated beneficiary was.
My understanding of the private ruling issued by the IRS, and I'm not a tax attorney and really would like to stay away from the tax issue, but my understanding is that if there is the possibility of reassignment or revocation of the beneficiary,
The IRS is not going to view that very favorably. At least that's our understanding of it. So it likely have to be something that's irrevocable. I'm not absolutely certain about how that would work or how the IRS would view it, but I think that where we are on this whole issue is we'd like to see this enabled. And certainly, as Senator Frank has indicated, there are going to be questions that will arise once it's enabled. And there will be undoubtedly more private rulings, private letters from the IRS, private rulings, I guess is what they call it. And there will be other opinions sought by the insurers who intend to sell it. I assume that there will be a structure built that will accommodate the interest of the IRS and the parties who want to gain by this, either a charitable organization who's receiving the benefit or the person who is making the donation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sandy Frank, is there a particular group of people who ask for this, or a particular charity that would like to be able to do this?
The Life Underwriters from Fairbanks approached me on it, and since that time we've also gotten letters of support from the United Way and the University of Alaska, and yeah, it's mostly, I think, it was brought to our attention by the Life Underwriters.
Okay. Come on, are there any questions for the Division of Insurance? So the department does support.
We do support.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much. Does anyone else, the Record Center Halford has joined us, does anyone else wish to testify on Senate Bill 342 today? Okay, thank you. Senator Halford, we've asked some IRS-related and definition of charitable organization related questions about the bill, and those have been answered to my satisfaction.
Does that definition include political parties, labor unions, and everybody else who are
apart from charitable? Apparently they're either C4s or C6s. I thought they were C6s, and we're not sure about that, but we're pretty sure they're not C3s.
Well, they're not.
He has a list of them.
Is this real charities? It's not like the gaming laws.
We've had that discussion too.
Mr. Sully said he had a list of the.
Yes.
Maybe he can read them out loud just so that we can kind of know what they are if there's not a million of them.
Okay. There are.
Subtitles, maybe.
Should I just hand the list around?
That would be helpful just so that we know what's on it. Let me answer a lot of questions.
Highlight some.
Tell you what, Helen, why don't we just take a brief at ease while we are. Is there any discussion? We have no one else to testify. Any discussion on the bill?
No, it looks pretty straightforward. Yeah.
What's the role of the committee?
Well, Madam Chair, I move that Senate Bill 342 be moved out of committee with individual recommendations and the attendant fiscal note, which I note to be a zero fiscal note from Commerce, Department of Commerce.
Right, there was a motion to move Senate Bill 342 with individual recommendations. Is anyone opposed to that motion? Great. It moves. And Senator Frank, we will all clap as you explain all the legal and tax questions on the floor.
Well,
I may defer to the articulate chair of the Labor and Commerce.
We need to go at ease while we get Senator Ewing. First hearing on Senate Bill 363 by Senator Ewing, Act requiring certain employers to post information on inquiries and complaints concerning sexual harassment or harassment.
Good, great, great.
I don't know which it is. But I found that debate quite as interesting as the Thomas Hill debate. We have in our packets a memo from Senator Ewing. I misspoke earlier. We do have position paper from the Department of Labor. We also have a zero fiscal note, but it's my understanding that an amendment that Senator Ewing may be offering would change the fiscal note. So I did misspeak earlier. We do have a bill summary. Senator Ewing, why don't you join us, please? Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill that's before you, there were two bills that were introduced. The one that this particular bill is 363. The other one is a resolution that just actually passed out of the State Affairs Committee this afternoon regarding setting up a handbook on what sexual harassment is and some of the problems surrounding it and how people can take the complaint to the proper authority. Because basically there's a lot of misconception out there, basically from the hearings that occurred last year from the Thomas, from the Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas proceedings before the United States Senate. There was a lot of confusion on what it was. Senate Bill 363 will require workplaces of 15 or more to post a notice in a prominent location stating what the federal definition of sexual harassment is, what state and federal agencies to report sexual harassment to or complaints, and how long an employee has to report a complaint. As you're probably aware, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission is the one that essentially sets what that is, and that would have to be posted. There is a significant amount of confusion, as I mentioned before, of what sexual harassment is and how it's constituted. The bill would inform workers as to what it is and how a complaint would be reported. According to the Human Rights Commission, sexual harassment is believed to be substantially underreported. Senate Bill 366 would heighten the awareness of the problem for both employers and employees. Last year, in large part, because of the increased attention given to the sexual harassment by the United States Senate hearings, the number of cases that were reported to the Human Rights Commission actually doubled from 14 to 28. Senate Bill 363 is supported by the Human Rights Commission and the Alaska Women's Political Caucus. And if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer them. And I want to look at that amendment.
Thank you, Senator Ewing. In our packets that you provided, there's a page that is the Code of Federal Regulations, 29 CFR, something like 1604.11. It sets out, I assume this is the definition, the federal definition that you imply on line 7.
Yeah. It's just a rewriting of it. Kind of a rough version of what the notice would look like.
Okay, so
I've got that, yeah.
This is all the, what was just handed to us is all the information that your bill would require be posted. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. So the definition. Does this would need a deadline, though?
Yeah, that's just a rough version of it.
Okay, are there deadlines?
300 days.
How many?
300 days.
Yes,
from the
title. Yeah, and there's a title on this. It should probably be all or any.
The sexual harassment complaint.
Right, right.
Complaints
it should be
need
all.
To be reported.
Yes, and then 300 days. Okay, but this essentially is the information that would be involved. Pretty soon we're going to have to legislate that businesses have to have one solid wall with no windows so we can put all these
notices on there, sure. The amendment that you should have in your packet, which is page 2, line 2, inserts the Alaska State Commission for Human Rights shall prepare and make available to employers notices that meet the requirements of this section. We want to make it sort of a uniform way of doing it, I believe, and the Human Rights Commission is one of the ways that it can be done. Also, I might mention that we do have a fiscal note in the packet as well. I think, Madam Chair, you mentioned that. Zero fiscal note on there.
Right. Your zero fiscal note is the bill is written. It would be my understanding,
right,
and it makes sense, that if we tell the Commission for Human Rights that they have to prepare and make available these notices, I don't know how many businesses we have in the state, but there'll be a certain cost
sure.
doing that and getting them, making them available. So. Do you want, is that an amendment you do want to add it
yes.
to the bill?
I think it would make it more consistent and make it flow, unless there was another way of doing it that you could think it could be more cost effective, although I think Brian, much of my staff has been researching all this, so.
Okay. Why don't we do this, Senator Ewing, if it would
surely
meet your needs. We could have the bill redrafted
mm-hmm.
into a CS with that, and in the meantime, ask for an updated fiscal note with the proper information.
Well, they have a zero fiscal note, but this amendment's going to get a small fiscal.
Yeah, we're going to have to get a new fiscal note.
Yeah, I had a question on the original zero fiscal note.
Okay.
So yes. It assumes that the required posters will be provided to the department for distribution to state agencies. Will be provided by who?
Well, that was their assumption that somebody else was going to give it to them, and they weren't going to have to do it. And that's the point. Somebody else needs to be identified.
So now this clarifies it, but also clarifies that it does have a fiscal note. They're not coming from heaven.
That's correct. Okay, any other questions for Senator Bill? Senator, if you'd like to join us around the corner. What? You want to join us around the corner? Sherry Gall wants to testify.
Sure. Sherry, did you want to
and
take this chair?
And we have this chair.
I like sitting at this chair.
We do have people from the personnel department who don't want to testify, but probably would be happy to say that these aren't going to fall out of the sky.
Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sherry Ball, and I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Women's Lobby. We do support this legislation. The Women's Lobby just had a teleconference hearing last night, and they did want to support both of these pieces of legislation, but they did have one suggested change to this bill. They felt pretty strongly that it should apply to all employers, that sexual harassment, you know, happens between two people usually, and that there wasn't a need to limit it to employers who employed more than 15 people. So we would ask for consideration of that.
Questions for Ms. Gall?
Madam Chair, I appreciate that, and I appreciate that thought, the thinking on that. I think in other states where they've done this, they have, and this criteria came up in a number of other areas and a number of other states, and the fact was, a lot of the facts surrounding it were that 15 we found was a pretty logical kind of number to make it so that we, you know, the small. Otherwise, it could be a nightmare trying to get all these things out to people.
Well, unless you have a point. Where in the statutes does this fit in terms of what is the penalty to a business, whatever its size, if they don't post these notices?
We didn't put any penalties.
But it must.
I don't know that this would necessarily be something that you could penalize people on.
Right.
Only obvious.
Well,
I mean, that's certainly something that can be under consideration by the committee.
Shall,
you have to look at
2310
to find out whether they lose their gold star.
There's
got to
be something.
So,
questions for Sherry related to size of businesses? Okay, thank you. We'll take that into consideration. Can either of you answer the question of what a penalty would be? I mean, when we say you shall do this, one assumes that it's in the statutes where there probably is a
yes.
Something happens if you don't. Nobody knows.
Which is normally under the Human Rights Commission. It was removed into 1880. They have normally the Human Rights Commission would enforce under 1880. Any of the requirements of the law, if this were moved into 1880, they would use their normal procedures.
So, Madam Chair, what you're saying is essentially if it was just moved in the statutes to that section, it would automatically comply with that?
With the Human Rights Act.
Right.
Might check with Paula Haley or...
We'd be welcome to do that.
And if we do that, the fiscal note's going to get larger because then there's going to be enforcement costs. Probably.
Could they answer that question for me, Madam Chair? The question she had was then, if it moves over to Human Rights Commission, goes under that certain statute section, that there will be additional costs then that will be implied or will be evident?
The question fairly put would be if they use the normal enforcement procedures, will
there
be Human Rights Commission
yes.
Cost be associated?
Right.
Right. Right. Senator Halvin.
The penalty section of 2310 is in 2310-400. Penalty, an employer who violates 2310-375-400, in addition to any civil penalty, guilty of a misdemeanor and wrongful conviction, is punishable by a fine of not more than $1,000. If you wanted that to apply, you would just have to change the citation to AS 2310-375-400 to AS 2310-375-440.
Yeah. Okay.
Sir Ewing, why don't we...
That would be fine, too, as well, if it was just up to $1,000 or something.
Why don't we, since we have to hold this for the
Surely.
Future fiscal notes anyway, why don't you have your staff contact the Human Rights Commission and see whether they want the additional onus of having this under their statutes and therefore they being required to enforce. And in the meantime, I suspect that who's the enforcing agency in a Halperin 23?
Of course, one of the things referred to is civil liability, so that's lawsuit.
They can do that anyway, regardless of the bill, right?
Yeah. But there must be some agency that this belongs to.
Well, this title is Labor and Workers' Compensation.
Right, and I suspect the Department of Labor is going to want to look at what their enforcement costs might be.
There should be a memorandum from the Human Rights Commission as to, from Paula Haley, she, there with him. She basically says it's difficult to predict the impact of the workload, although if this is passed, it will be a heightened awareness and there will be more cases for the Human Rights Commission.
Well, there may be less.
Yeah.
There may be less.
On the positive, that's a good point.
You know, people might be aware of it and it might be a reminder to people that they can't fool around and do some of the things that they've done in the past.
Yeah. And that, Madam Chair, that's a really good point because I think that's what we want to really alleviate was if we could do this up front and that we could make people clear on what it is, then it might, in fact, change the number of the caseloads, and it wouldn't necessarily have to be going up. We want the public to be aware of that situation out there so that we can avoid the confrontations of the future. So I like that's a really good point.
Okay. One way or another, Senator Yearling, I think you need to tie in some change language, whether it's in Section 23 mm-hmm. or whether we move the whole thing to Section 18 for enforcement provisions. Add your other language.
Yes.
So.
I guess, Madam Chair, I just wanted to make the if we do have some enforcement provisions, let's just make them as. I mean, the idea was to get the posting out there and make people aware of the situation. I don't think we put a lot of onus of
$1 million bonds.
Yeah. That wasn't the objective. It is if there's just a paragraph on a penalty of such and such, or if it fits right in, fine. But we don't want to make it an extra burden on the Human Rights Commission on all these extra things. They don't even have hardly as much, you know, they have a cut down amount of money and staff and so on, from what I understand.
Well, do you really want to fine somebody $1,000 for not doing it?
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. I have to think about that. That's up to the committee.
Probably as a good frame of reference would be some of the other posting legislation that we've passed,
right.
For example, on
fetal
alcohol
syndrome, which is a big
hot
issue.
Posters, I recall the fiscal notes on those were very small. They really weren't big at all, and I don't think the fines were. It would seem to me that certainly any fines or fiscal notes should be consistent with that legislation that has passed recently. It's kind of the same thing.
But we've missed a major debate on the size of the lettering and the contrast in colors and how it should be displayed.
We didn't want to get into that, but we could have.
The Finance Committee.
Being conservative, we will let them choose a reasonable, cost-effective way.
Black and white, you know.
I remember that debate on the ground. You know,
I mean, this would fit on the back of a business card.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, Senator Yearling, we will hold
Thank
this
you.
Over. We will work with you and your staff to try to come up with some answers and get a proposed CS ready to bring back, and we will try to bring that back to the committee next week.
Okay.
Okay. Does anyone else want to testify on the present version of Senate Bill 363 while we have it here? Okay, great.
And, Madam Chair, I'm glad I had the opportunity of presenting it to the committee next week. I may not be here for the exact day that you're having your meeting, but
okay.
Brian will be here, and I will we'll start working on that fiscal month ahead of time.
Okay, great.
Thank you, and can I be excused?
Yes, sir.
I'm going down to find out about election law and how we're going to fix that.
Take good care of it.
Good luck.
It's too screwed up right now.
Okay, other business to come before the committee. We do not have any new schedule this Friday. However, next Monday, we hope to bring both of Senator Collins' bills back before the committee that we had to hold over on Monday, Senate Bill 290 and 320. We also have a first hearing on Senate Bill 355, Senator Sturgeolowski's bill that would extend regional economic assistance programs, and that is the change of a sunset. Right?
Yes.
Then Wednesday of next week, I don't know whether each of you has seen it yet, but you have in your offices for your weekend reading pleasure the 160-odd page insurance statute rewrite, along with its three ring binders that are like this that go with it. Dave Walsh will be here next Wednesday to give us an overview, and there'll be a quiz. Then after we finished with that first hearing, we have House Bill 247, representing Mackey's bill, that is the credentialing, is that the right word, credentialing bill for dentists that has come to us.
Do we get expelled if we flunk?
Everybody.
Do we get expelled if
no,
we flunk?
No, if you flunk, you have to stay
longer.
You have to stay the whole presentation over and over and over. See, if no one has any other business for the committee, we are adjourned.